Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, Valentine's Day, fast approaching. So, of course, we have decided here to devote a few different episodes to, you could say, Valentine's Day content, or maybe anti-Valentine's Day content.
Yeah, usually Valentine's Day comes around and we sort of begrudgingly do an anti-Valentine's Day, just to be like, yeah, it's coming up.
Yeah.
Terrible. But I've noticed this time we have like five or six topics that we have planned to really plumb the depths of different aspects of Valentine's Day.
And yeah, to really attack it from like four different fronts and just take it out.
Yeah, 2015.
Not to dinner, just take it out.
Yeah, take it out. Yeah. You know what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. So 2015, we're really going to get into Valentine's Day. We're going to dust it and put it away. And we're going to start by exploring the color pink.
Yes, because pink and red are the predominant color scheme for Valentine's Day. It's the colors that just assault you. Come pretty much the end of January, maybe even right after Christmas these days, you'd start seeing it popping up everywhere, trying to sell you that candy, try to sell you those flowers, try to sell you God knows what else, all in the name of this big commercial holiday.
Yeah, I call it the pink menace. And I call it that for a couple of different reasons. Some, you know, the associations with Valentine's Day, which is this sort of triacle that we cling to, these notions of idealized love and so on and so forth. But also because I just don't enjoy the color pink, and I never have.
So you don't like looking at it? You don't like wearing it?
It makes me feel unsettled.
Okay.
Okay. And this is something I'm going to point out. I think some of our female listeners will understand what I'm talking about here. There is a certain hue of pink that you will find in a gynecologist's office. And it's usually this kind of mauvey pink hue that you find in literature about the reproductive system, or you even see in the models of the reproductive system.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. That shade of pink you also see on the translucent pages that go over anatomical illustrations. You see it like nice and shiny there.
Yeah, but you particularly will see it in a gynecologist's office.
Okay.
And I call it vagina pink. And it's just that kind of shade of pink that's just, it doesn't have a lot of verve to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a depressing pink. And also, I feel like I'm in the gynecologist's office. I don't necessarily need to be you know, walloped over the head with this color. I know what I'm there for. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in our culture, pink has become this huge gender thing. It's become the color for females, right?
It's become fetishized, I think. Yeah. I mean, think about pink diamonds, pink firearms, pink Legos, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Pink salt? Does that count?
I feel like that is the natural colored salt, right? Himalayan salt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very tasty. So I will put that to the side.
Okay.
Beautiful cracked over a freshly baked pizza.
Okay. So in this episode, we're going to discuss pink. We're going to talk about pink from a cultural and historic standpoint. We're going to break down some of the science of pink. And, you know, and at the end of it, we're going to reach out to the rest of you and get your input on pink as a color that appears in our surroundings, as a color that we take on for ourselves. How do we feel about it, and how does it make others feel?
Yeah, I'd like to read this quote from Elizabeth Camp. She's writing for Aeon magazine, and she says, "Pink matters because it is bound up with ways of being in the world that are partially aesthetic, but also personal and political. Colors encode aesthetic norms that run straight through to style, personality, culture, and class."
You know, growing up, I feel that pink was never like a huge deal. Like, I wasn't one of those kids that was raised with this idea, like, just beaten into you do not wear pink because pink is a girl's color. But on the other hand, I don't remember having a lot of pink clothes, except perhaps around Easter, you know, where you would have to have dressed mm-hmm. in sort of pastel colors. And go, everybody goes to church and you get this horrible picture made, and it's, you know, and you're a kid. It's kind of sunny out. You just, all you want to do is get out of those church clothes. And, but instead you have to stand around and stay in them and wait for everybody to get together. Yeah. So I have kind of those connotations with pink and some of its pastel colors. Not so much that it's, I guess a little bit that it is feminine as well, because you end up going to, you know, to junior high, and then it's the issue of gender is huge, to the point where I remember being made fun of because my legs weren't hairy enough, and therefore it was a sign of femininity in me, and was there, and I remember feeling bad about it, like, oh, I guess I have to wear long pants all the time.
Yeah, so, I was going to talk to you about that. But let me ask you this: does the color pink ever evoke associations with calmness or peacefulness?
Well, I will say, when it comes to Pepto-Bismol, there is the promise of possible peace with the color. But with that, I also have a strong memory of, it was either me or one of my sisters taking Pepto-Bismol for an unsettled stomach as a kid, and then vomiting it up against the wall and onto the floor, and the floor was white carpet. So we had a nice pink stain there from where someone had vomited.
Okay, well, that ties in lovely to a color called Drunk Tank Pink. And why does that tie in so well? Well, it is a color that was used, and actually I believe it's still used, mm-hmm. in some holding cells in jails. It's a bubblegum pink color, and think about a sort of maybe an unruly intoxicated person. They're locked up. The cell they're put in is this drunk tank pink. What are the effects?
Well, the idea here is that the pink is going to have a calming effect, a soothing effect, because you have not a, you know, necessarily a delightful TV drunk like Otis on Andy Griffith's show, but rather somebody who might be a little violent, a little out of it, and a little perturbed. They've been apprehended and placed inside of a cell. So if there is a promise of potential calming from this color, in fact, if you have some studies that back this up as well, mm-hmm. all the more reason to just throw a bunch of pink paint at the problem and hope that it's kind of a magic bullet, right?
Yeah. And this was discovered in the 1980s by a psychologist who figured out that this hue of pink could really calm people down. And they used it on buses, school buses. They painted the seats pink, and they discovered that vandalism rates declined. Door-to-door charity workers wore pink shirts, and their donations rose threefold. And some very clever football coaches even introduced the color into locker rooms.
Yeah, in particular, the visitors' locker room at the University of Iowa was painted pink back in 1979, and it was heavily criticized for being, you know, this means of demoralizing and also trying to to use colors to manipulate the effectiveness of your opponents. One of the key individuals that pops up in these studies is Alexander Schaus, and that's why you'll sometimes see the pink, this particular mode of pink referred to as Schaus pink, also known as Baker-Miller pink, also known as passive pink, also known as P6118. Which I like that because it sounds even more nefarious. Like, are you going to use P6118 against your enemies?
Well, and that has sort of a incarcerated sound to it as well, right?
Yeah.
Bring out the P1618.
Schaus is quoted as saying, even if a person tries to be angry or aggressive in the presence of pink, he can't. The heart muscles can't race fast enough. It's a tranquilizing color that saps your energy. Even the colorblind are tranquilized by pink rooms. Very much playing into this idea that it's like a vampire of colors. It just saps your soul out of you. He conducted a couple of different studies. The most notable one was published in the final issue of Orthomolecular Psychiatry in 1979. This one, he took 153 healthy men, exposed them to cardboard squares. One of them blue, one of them pink. And after a full minute of staring at these, they were asked to hold their arms out in front of their bodies, you know, like a horror movie, zombie or mummy or something. And, you know, and see how long they could hold them out. And then their arms were put down. They were given a few seconds to recover. And then they did a second test, same thing. And he found that all but two men were dramatically weaker after staring at the pink, while blue left the strength in the test subjects intact in both the first and the second strength tests. He ended up following this up with another study, 38 men squeezing a measuring device, and again found that they were weaker after exposure to the pink.
Now, the amount of time that you're exposed to the pink is really key here, because Adam Alter, who wrote the book Drunk Tank Pink, has said that there's pretty good evidence that over a 9-month period, the very aggressive prisoners at a naval prison in Seattle were much better behaved when they emerged 15 minutes after being put in the pink drunk tank. After that 15-minute exposure, if you go up to 30 minutes, you have the reverse effects of that calming, soothing color. All of a sudden, that color becomes distracting. It becomes angering.
Yeah. There's also this idea that you're tamping everything down. You're kind of repressing stuff, and it's going to eventually explode. Like, pink cannot constrain the beastly heart for too long.
It cannot. The Mary Kay of it all will just fall apart, and the beast within all of us. Even Mary Kay will emerge.
So we were talking about this after we looked at some of these studies, instantly thinking about the use of pink in sport and in physical combat. Like, you would think you would see more usage of pink on the playing field, and even on the battlefield, in lieu of some of these colors. It wouldn't just be a matter of, let's paint the visitor locker room pink in hopes that we'll mess with their head. Like, why not just full on pink uniforms and let your opponents try and play against that? You get a 30-minute advantage, right?
Right.
And then they're going to start to become aggressive, but maybe they'll be a little over-aggressive. I don't know much about sports, but maybe it's like a judo thing where, you know, they're really ramping it up, then you can adjust accordingly and use their aggression against them.
Well, we were also talking about Dennis Rodman, who we were saying seems to have co-opted a lot of the more feminine aspects of his dress and his portrayal of himself. I mean, just think about this guy. He's a big guy. If I were to be a basketball player and met him on the court, I might be like, wow, okay, this guy is formidable. But now think of Dennis Rodman wearing lipstick, or his hair is a very feminine color, or he's wearing makeup.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's like you're playing against a drag queen. And this becomes an entirely different proposition, because now Dennis Rodman is playing with coda, with gender, and with hetero norms. And we know, and we'll talk about this more, that nothing could be more unsettling in a society that really ascribes to gender norms than someone crossing those boundaries and playing with it. And it becomes a bit of a threat.
Yeah, you're turning our established symbols and motifs on their head. And it's essentially playing mind games with me. Like, suddenly I have to do a whole lot of extra computing to make sense of you on the basketball court. Whereas before, you were just a big dude. And I'm surrounded by big dudes. I'm a basketball player out there. I'm probably a big dude myself, But then this just throws everything on its head.
Yeah, so what we're saying is make sports more interesting. Put the drag element in there.
Yeah.
RuPaul coaches. This is going to really amp up the psychological aspect of it.
I say this a lot, but I would be pretty much into any sport if it could itself be more like pro wrestling. So in pro wrestling, you see lots of crazy outfits and face paint. If you saw more crazy outfits and face paint in, say, professional basketball, I would be more tempted to watch.
I would be there with you. Yeah. I got to tell you. Now, one of the things that we talked about, these archetypes that you could turn your head, is this idea that women like pink. It's completely ingrained. It's hardwired. And this, of course, is an erroneous idea out there that women are inherently gravitating toward pink. And we sort of touched on this a bit, albeit indirectly, when we did our episode on the color blue.
Right.
Because it turns out that most people prefer blue overall than any other color.
That's right. I remember in that episode I mentioned that my wife and I, we didn't say, all right, here's blue. This is the boy's color. This is the one you should like. Stay away from pink. But he ends up gravitating towards blue.
Yeah, and I believe that study, I know it was a paint company that funded it. But I want to say it was 30 countries that they surveyed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was blue first, and then I believe it was green. And then yellow was maybe the last color that people preferred or didn't prefer very much. Pink didn't even make it onto that list, is my point. So if you delve into this a little bit more, you'll see that there's a 2011 study published in the British Journal of Developmental Psychology. And they had one-year-old girls and boys that were shown pairs of identical objects like bracelets, pillboxes, and picture frames, but with one of those objects being pink and the other being a second color. Now, they were no more likely to choose pink than any other color. But after the age of 2, the girls started to like pink, and by 4, boys were determined in their rejection of pink. And the point of this is that it is not hardwired. It is a cultural script that kids begin to absorb via all of the media around them, via the ways in which their parents may dress them or direct them toward things.
Plus, you're growing up in an age of TV abundance. You're just constantly marketed to with products, the pink for the girls, the blue or some other color for the boys. And it's just beaten down into your head. That being said, it's weird to look back at my own childhood, having been raised very much in this age of just all the television you can stand, and then all the messages that are on those airwaves. I distinctly remember, Kinkishi muscle figures. I don't know if you remember these at all. They're like little, a Japanese product, if I remember correctly. And it was Kinkishi in Japan, and in the U.S. it was Muscle Men. And they were all these kind of wild sort of pro wrestler characters, but they had like, you know, crazy animal heads or extra limbs. They were just elaborate comic book type characters, but they were all made out of this pink, bendable material. And there was nothing, you know, you just completely accepted that. They're pink. Mm-hmm. I guess they're kind of fleshy. I don't know.
They were called Muscle Men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And muscles are pink.
They weren't called squishy, non-muscly women.
I guess. Yeah, maybe that's the thing. Maybe there was a discussion where someone said, all right, these Kinkishi guys are pretty cool, but if we're going to market them in the U.S., we need to name them something really masculine to make up for the pink color. I don't know.
Yeah, that's some gender performance term there, like Muscle Men, yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we are going to talk about the color pink and how it actually hung with the guys for a long time.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're talking about pink. We've already talked about some of the psychology of pink and the science of pink. Now we're talking about gender and pink, and specifically how it's become coded into our culture, especially here in the West.
Yeah, because we think about pink as just being squarely for girls and women. But in fact, up until the 1900s, it was just as equally worn among men and women. And in the 1700s, too, you look back at old plates and you will see that men were just as likely to wear shades of lilac and pink as a woman. So what's interesting is you get to the 1900s and you get to children, right? And this is where the coding begins. And largely in the early 1900s, you have white clothing for children. And the reason for that is because when they're very young, what do? They spill things all over themselves. They urinate on themselves. There's a lot of washing of clothes, and so you don't want dyes in there. But as the chemical process gets a little bit easier for clothes to retain dye, then you begin to see more color spring up in children's clothing.
Okay, so we go from basically not having colors for the children, and now we have them. So, yeah, suddenly colors are in play for the young children, and it's left to the fashion authorities to tell you what colors you should dress your children in. And interestingly enough, since there's not an established culture of pink for girls, blue for boys, and in fact, pink is historically had been used by men and had been a masculine color in many instances. You saw advice such as the following from a June 1918 article in the trade publication Earnshaw's Infants Department. It said, "The generally accepted rule is pink for boys and blue for the girls. The reason is that pink, being a more decided and stronger color, is more suitable for the boy, while blue, which is more delicate and dainty, is prettier for the girl." The complete reversal of what ends up becoming the gender color standard.
Right, because pink is associated with red, and red is a more virile, sanguine color, like the color of blood. It's robust.
Indeed. I mean, you're familiar with Game of Thrones.
Yes, I am.
You know House Bolton, of course.
Yes.
Vicious house. Their sigil is the flayed man, and the colors of that sigil, red and pink. That's the colors of taking a person's skin off.
I was just about to say, that's what you would find, right?
Yeah.
Little pink, little red.
Yeah.
Now, the color pink didn't become co-opted for women until after World War II. Now, think about this, because this is important. Mm-hmm. During World War II, you have Rosie the Riveter.
Yes.
You have a pretty stark reversal of gender roles, right? Because you have now women that are in factories and they are working and they are making income.
Because the men are having to go overseas and fight in the war.
Exactly. So what happens after that is men return, and then there's this really intense movement for heteronormatizing the gender roles.
Huh.
For essentially putting women back in their place. And you see that in the fashion of the day, right? Because you see post-World War II, no longer is Rosie wearing her dungarees, right? Her blue dungarees. You see women in ads with like nipped in waist, mm-hmm. and they're wearing a lot of pink, and a lot of product play is coming in. You see a lot of shades of pink in the products that are being offered. And the message is that the woman's house is her domain. So it's no longer like Rosie the Riveter. It's more like tend to your roses.
Yeah,
pink roses.
And instead of working on the machinery, suddenly you have the benefit of all this new futuristic machinery that's coming into your kitchen and into your household for you to utilize in your traditional feminine role in the house.
Yeah, and hey, why not get some of that stuff in the shade of pink, especially new beauty products too, right? You've got a pink brush to comb your hair 100 times a day. Now, in the 70s, you do see pink taking a backseat. And some of that is because of the more feminist-oriented ideas that colors should be unisex.
Mm-hmm.
But then the big 80s return, and with the 80s, neon colors, fuchsia, and you see pink kind of trickling in again as a hyper-gender performing color.
Yeah, because on one hand, you get the idea that, you know what? Well, you know, women can be scientists, of course. Women can have all these different roles in society, but not only are they strong enough to do that, they're strong enough to wear pink if they want to. Right?
Yeah, yes, but I feel like some of this was really just a marketing juggernaut.
Yeah.
And we've seen this, you know, of late in, say, Legos,
mm-hmm.
because no longer is it just, you know, here's these primary colored Legos. Now you have more girly hues of Legos and pink and purple and other pastels that are being marketed. It's pretty brilliant because now if you have a two-child family, two different genders, you don't have just one set of Legos, you have two.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with like a Easy Bake Oven type devices. I've seen those where you have the existing one, which is generally some sort of a pink kind of a color scheme. Then you just change it to black or blue or something, or black and green, and get a boy to cook little gross things in it, right? And then it's marketed to those gender stereotypes.
Yeah. Side note, my daughter got an Easy Bake Oven for Christmas.
Oh, yeah? What color is it? Am I totally miscasting it?
Purple and pink, I got to tell you.
Oh, okay.
Although they come in different colors. And the pizza is disgusting. I didn't think I'd ever met a pizza I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to spit it out into the trash can. I don't know what they're using in that mix.
Also worth noting in this whole 1980s reconfusion of pink is that you also see pink being utilized as a in fashions for men, but it's oftentimes kind of wrapped in this way of thinking, like, he is so masculine, he's wearing pink, he doesn't even care. That's how masculine he is.
I feel like that's what happened with purple. Remember the purple tie craze and purple shirt craze happening in the menosphere?
No.
Yeah, that was like the, I want to say like, for some reason, God, why is this in my head? Regis Philbin like ushered this in. But anyway, like over the past 5 years, it was like, yes, wearing purple. We're doing it with style and masculinity, which is totally fine with me. I just think it's interesting to see colors, genderized like that. But then I feel like a lot of that kind of gets back to this whole idea of, again, what the color represents and this idea of children and pink and little girls are sugar and spice and everything nice, you know, and boys are, what is it? Puppy dog tails
and snail tails, gross things, slimy things.
Yeah. And then pink becomes this sort of confectionery color, right? Mm-hmm. And girls are like cupcakes and not to take this too far afield, but what happens when you transform a girl into everything nice and she's all delicious spice and she's a cupcake? It's a lot easier to walk that kid into objectification the older she gets. She's something to be consumed or to be, you know, looked at.
Yeah, she's something unnatural, something manufactured for consumption. And it's really weird place to wind up as a culture. If I can return to pro wrestling for just one second.
Of course. You can always return
to the last time in this episode, I do want to point out Bret the Hitman Hart, one of the icons of pro wrestling, always wore pink. Like sometimes it was very pink, like predominantly pink, his outfit. Other times it would be like a pink and black type of setting. And a lot of times he was a good guy, sometimes he was a bad guy, but it never played into any kind, like he never did any kind of effeminate character. Like it was never playing into feminine pink. It was just his last name is Hart, and Valentine's Day is pink, so he just wore pink. So.
Well, and if we've learned anything from David Eagleman, we know that the unconscious is really at work here, right? So if you're named Hart, maybe you would say, ah, yes, hearts are pink and red, and I assume that role for myself.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to go back to Camp in her article in Aeon real quick, and I'm going to read this quote. She says, "The exclusion of boys from a wide range of perfectly viable, even important forms of dress and play because of their association with femininity is bad enough. But in a patriarchal society, the confinement of girls to a limited set of permissible ways of being is considerably worse. In particular, there is empirical evidence, such as the 1998 research from the University of Michigan, to suggest that highly gendered clothing can serve as a trigger for something called stereotype threat, meaning that girls and women end up performing worse than they could on tests of stereotypically male abilities, such as mathematics and engineering." Now, I know that Steph Mom Never Told You has talked about stereotype threat quite a bit, and particularly in the fields of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. But this is all part and parcel, this idea that you're performing gender, you're doing it via color, via the things that you wear. And if girls are bad at math, as Barbie once said when you pulled a cord on her, then they're primed to be bad at math. And that's why all of this matters, all this sort of symbolism.
Yeah. I mean, it really gets down to symbolism. And I'll make sure to link to our previous episode on the power of symbols on the landing page for this episode at stufftoblowyourmind.com, because a lot of the same energy is at work. We establish all these meanings for these symbols and then also just the colors themselves. And then our brain is interacting with those symbols at a subconscious level. So, I mean, they're really controlling us.
Yeah, especially when you look at Victoria's Secret, okay, which we're going to talk about in the next episode, too,
by the way. Yeah, it's its own episode.
If you look at something called Pink Nation, which is a range of underwear for tweens, and it's like this crazy, you know, fuchsia pink colored thing, and it's like these thongs and stuff like that. You know, it's like, it's unsettling because you do see that. You see all of this stuff being codified and put out there and consumed by the general public. And so, you know, again, going back to David Eagleman, so much of this is working on an unconscious level.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential and then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
You know, there's an article in The Atlantic, definitely worth checking out, titled, "Will a Major Sports Team Ever Wear Pink?" that I found pretty interesting. It does point that in the 19th century, you did see Penn State deciding on pink and black for the schools and therefore the football team's colors, and they later changed it to blue and white. But for the most part, you do not see pink in any kind of major usage with a major sports team, except during October. Or Pinktober, as it's become branded, where pink, of course, is the color that has been taken on by the by breast cancer awareness groups, and to help promote that cause, you'll see sports teams adding some pink to their outfits, wearing pink bands in wrestling. Sorry, came back to it one more time. They'll add like a pink rope, you know, and then wrestlers will have like pink have pink outfits that normally they wouldn't have the pink color scheme, and all that actually just serves to cement the idea that pink is a feminine color, and if a male is to wear it, then he's just doing it out of a show of strength and bravery, you know, for his female counterparts.
Although breast cancer does affect men too,
yes,
albeit not at the same rates. Yeah, it's interesting that it is then used so effectively in that campaign.
Oh
right?
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's not a color that's sort of a boring color. It really captures your attention, and so it is put to good use in that campaign. And as you say, it further cements the idea that it's genderized. And then there's this additional idea that maybe there's a pink pride going on, you know, via the pink Lego set. Like maybe it's hey, well, girls can be engineers too, and they, you know, we'll just put some pink on it and encourage them to do it. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I don't know why you would have to associate pride with it. Why wouldn't you just encourage the child to play with whatever the engineering building block set in the first place in a very non-gendered way?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, unless it's, you know, the point where they're already completely control by the symbols in place.
Yeah. And that, you know, my daughter certainly went through a brief pink phase. Mm-hmm. And I would say that she's pretty well balanced in whatever you would say that the colors of that symbolize being a girl and a boy. And she was Jay from Ninjago for Halloween. She, mm-hmm. she was so excited to be the blue ninja. So I have hopes there because, you know, we've tried to tell her that this is, these sorts of things are available to you no matter what your gender is.
Is there a pink Ninjago?
There is not a pink Ninjago. There is Naya who is, she's not a ninja. She's a samurai.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's a bit apart from the rest of the ninja. But, you know, she's a character on there. But daughter's not interested in her. She's interested in Jay. No, she wears red.
Okay.
The question that we have about pink, and we're not trying to...
blow your mind?
No, I was going to say we're not trying to whittle pink down to nothing. But the question that comes up is, does pink even exist? Which is kind of not a fair question, but we'll go ahead and ask it.
Right. It definitely made the rounds, this particular headline, because at surface level, it's just nice and mind-blowing and makes you really love science. If you're the type of person who loves science without reading beyond a headline, then yeah, you just think, whoa, pink doesn't exist. I see it, but it doesn't exist. That's blowing my mind. That's like, you know, but when you actually get into it, it's a bit more complex than that. But it's also a bit more mind-blowing than that. When you start talking about how we perceive colors and ultimately how we perceive the details of what we take to be reality.
Yeah, I mean, here's the simplest way to say this, is that there is no single wavelength of visible light that appears pink. So think of Roy G. Biv, right? You're red, you're orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet.
Mm-hmm.
That is all the visible spectrum of light. There is no pink within it.
Yeah, we don't see pink wavelengths of light. Something looks pink because certain wavelengths of light are reflected and others are absorbed by the pigments. Pink is a reflective color, not a transmissive color. You perceive it because your brain translates light bouncing off of the pink object.
And moreover, it's a bit of color mixing by your brain. So consider this. At the back of your eyeball, specifically on your retina, you have a bunch of rods and cones.
Okay.
Now, rods are just all interested in the amount of light that's coming in, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're light sensitive. And cones, on the other hand, are all interested in color. But the cones come in only three types, red, green, and blue sensitive. So what's a pink to do? Well, there has to be some color mixing by those cones. So if you think about it, you have blue cones working with green cones to produce cyan, and then they work with red cones to produce the color magenta. Now, if you want a true pink, then you have to have those cones firing just partially, those blue and green ones firing mm-hmm. partially, but the red ones fully firing.
Okay.
And that's when you get a bit of, you know, messaging to your brain, hey, we've mixed this together, and that's pink that you're looking at right now, which is kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to throw a little more context, too, when you see white, that means all the cones are activated. Black, none of the cones are activated. And if you want to see gray, that's all three cones activated, but only partially. So similar in a way to pink. So you think of gray and pink in similar terms.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. If you look at a yellow banana, right, mm-hmm. Your eye lacks yellow-sensitive cones. So then the yellow of that banana activates your red and green cones, and they fire together, and then they send a message to your brain. So it really is like having a little artist in your brain there.
But ultimately, it's all kind of like having a little artist in your brain.
I mean, yeah.
In a sense, I mean, I don't want to feed into the idea that we're just brains in a body or a rider on a horse. We've talked about the mind-body connection plenty of times. But essentially, blind brain, depending on these feeble sight organs to relay information to it and convince it what the outside world consists of.
Yeah, and in a Scientific American blog entitled Stop This Absurd War on Pink, the author explains that photons and neurons interplaying with cones in the eye and the perception of the brain area is pretty much a magic trick, that any color is all in our head. And this is from the article. It says, pink is real or it is not, but it's just as real or not real as red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet.
Hmm.
So in other words, we probably shouldn't, you know, quibble about whether or not pink exists.
But a lot of people were really quick to dismiss it and cast it aside and use this against pink.
They are. And, you know, I'm tempted to. I'm not a fan of pink. But, hey, it's there. It's around. It's Pepto-Bismol, right? It's in the color code.
Do you think some people might have leaped to this as well because they identify pink as a feminine color and would therefore see this as an attack on the female gender entirely?
I mean, I suppose you could tease a subtext like that out of it and say it's so weak, it doesn't even exist, pink.
Yeah, or maybe they have some sort of agenda against other groups out there, or maybe against just Bret Hart in general. I don't know.
I think it is the Bret Hart conspiracy.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. There's our exploration of pink, and hopefully this episode itself was in the pink. Was pink in the sense that just exactly the way we meant to do it.
That's right, because the etymology of in the pink originally meant like the top of something. Like, you know, it's in the pink. It's the top of its class. But then later on, it began to take on associations with good health.
Yeah, I was reading that it's possible that it also ties into fox hunting jackets as well.
Which were more red, right?
Yeah.
But again, the association is between red and pink. There's
You kind of get back to that Bolton territory where it's the colors of tearing something apart. So it would be, you know, in keeping with fox hunting.
Wow, that was nice. That brought it full circle.
Yeah. Hey, in the meantime, if you want to catch up on other episodes we've recorded, if you want to check out the landing page for this episode and check out the links, I'll also include some links to some of these outside sources we've been talking about. Go to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is our mothership. You'll find all the podcasts, all the blog posts, all the videos, links out to our social media accounts, anything you could desire.
And if you have pink-hued thoughts that you would like to share with us, we would love to hear them. You can send them to blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.